Welcome to Plodcast. Discover, experience and connect to the people and work of the Metropolitan Police Service in Kingston, Merton, Richmond and Wandsworth.
Long time no see, Claire.
Long time no see. Well, before we kick off, I just want to say a couple of apologies. Mm-hmm. Do you mind?
Go for it.
Okay, so first of all, I'd just like to apologise for the last episode and the quality of it.
Shocking.
And that after we did the interview with Liz, although I was planning to put it out maybe within a couple of weeks, she made the suggestion that she wanted it out the next week. So it was very, very quick. So I do apologise for the quality of it because I was on a tight time frame to get it out very quickly. So
it was sort of dangling over your head.
It was. And then the second apology I'd like to make is for the gap that's been between the two episodes.
Yep, extended gap.
Yeah, and that we have had a lot that's been going on. And for one reason or another, we've had to cancel. So we just want to apologise for that, that we know you've all been wanting to listen to the next episode. We will now hopefully continue to try and make it a little bit more regular without the long gap. But you've all been enjoying yourself as lockdown has... Everyone's come out of lockdown, should I say, and that you're starting to get some sort of normality back in your lives. So apologies for that. But let's move on. We're ready to roll on with this episode and expect our guests very shortly, Dan.
It's clear. What's on the list?
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is...
Tokyo 2020-2021, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Games.
It was very good, wasn't it?
What?
I thought it was good.
Don't know.
No?
Not for me. Not for me.
What wasn't for you? The fact that there was nobody around?
Through no fault of their own. And boy, did they try. But no, you can't do sort of top level sport with a couple of officials clapping in the audience.
See, I like it for the fact that the athletes were able to compete. And for the for now 5 years of training, they were able to go to the Olympics and do what they do best after training. But I also feel sorry for Japan and the economy because the amount of money they would have got from hosting the Olympics
is absolutely
phenomenal. Yeah. So they've missed out on that. But it was their own fault in a way because they decided to say if it wasn't happening now, it was never going to happen. Well, and then who would it have fallen to, Dan? Who were the backup?
Well, yeah, I think we are the backup.
Yeah.
If by chance a host nation or city cannot do it, I think we were the backup. So it could have come back sooner than we thought.
Yeah. So I mean, I just
think that the Olympics is, and I know it's not the spirit, the true spirit of the Olympics. It's sort of based on,
well, it's representing the country, isn't it? That's the...
Well, yeah, but the origins of it, if we go back to sort of Pierre de Coubertin, is it? I think that's it, who it was. You know, it was all about sort of not being elite and about being amateur and the spirit of sport, which clearly isn't that because you know, you've got Novak Djokovic, who's a
£100 million
in the bank playing tennis. But I like it big scale, and of course for no fault of their own, when it's scaled back down to the degree when you're just getting a trickle of athletes coming out, which should be sort of the biggest pinnacle in their sort of career, having to sort of downplay themselves. I wonder what's going on, Claire.
There's a lot of sirens outside, isn't there?
We're at Twickenham, which is where our response teams are based. It's not uncommon to have screaming cars around.
But they're obviously on the way to something, but it's kicking off into late turn, isn't it? So something's happening.
But yeah, having to pick up your own medals when you was, you know, at the medal presentation, and the dodgy commentary on the BBC, which normally is premium.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they did very well with their green screen, and I did end up seeing a little bit of a behind the scenes at one stage when they took it all back and you just saw the green screens, because I think the only thing that was in place was the table and the
great.
The floor.
It looked great, but the level of commentary was just poor.
Well,
I don't know what happened, whether they've just sort of given up or something, but it wasn't to their usual high standards, which...
No.
And it shows. As soon as that's taken away and you get less than sort of brilliant sort of commentary, which, you know, is a hallmark of sort of the BBC, especially in sports, and when that goes missing or just doesn't turn up, it's really noticeable. That on top of the visuals, you know, having no one in the crowd, and some of these children's sports that they're now dressing up as proper sport. skateboarding. And
well, I think they're just trying to encourage the younger generation and make it more interesting for young people. But talking about sport, I've started a new sport up.
God, hang on, let me guess. It's going to be a group sport, a team sport.
Yes.
It's going to be something with... It's got a ball involved, because you was into softball years ago, wasn't you?
Well, our friend played softball and he encouraged me to go, and I think I only went once, so...
Rounders is too juvenile. Let me think. Is it cricket?
Yeah, it is cricket. But I did think I mentioned it to you at one of our barbecues, didn't I? I think I was asking if anybody else had played cricket. But yes, I've given cricket. But it's been 27 years since I've actually played. So I've been longer out of the game than I have in. But it was like riding a bike. I play for my local team now and I absolutely love it.
I'm just glad that that's not in the Olympics, because it bores me senseless.
Well, the new... tournament that came out this year was better because it was called the 100. So it was 100 balls, and it was a lot more interesting, because rather than the test cricket where it's played over a few games and they play very conservatively, this was pretty much like, we've only got 10 balls, just whack it.
Your South London accent really comes out then.
Did it?
Balls.
But you just had to whack it, and it's a lot more entertaining, a lot more fun, a lot more of a family event and things. So it's, I watched that, was absolutely hooked by it and thought I'd give it a go, and I'm all right at it.
Claire, you are a Renaissance woman. There's nothing that you cannot turn your hand to.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
You know, there's not a part on a vehicle that you're not well acquainted to.
Well,
how do you do it?
Well, I don't know. I just like doing those. I just like doing those things. Yeah. So, but I'm always here to help you. So it's got to be a good thing for you.
And long may it continue. Okay,
thank you. So, what if it works on your list that you want to talk about?
That's it. It was just the Olympics.
Oh.
That's the thing. And I'm not going to mention teeth.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
I might save that up for another day.
Maybe we'll mention it at the next one.
Well, I know that you got a lot of fun out of it and endless laughing, but no, we'll keep that.
Oh, yes. Let's keep that till next time, shall we? Because because if I start laughing now, which I did, we probably won't be able to fit our guests in.
We'll fill that gap in later.
Exactly.
Shall we?
Excuse the pun.
Who have we got coming up today?
We have got a couple of officers, senior officers.
Just a couple, isn't it?
From the investigations side of policing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are at the door now. So let's take a short... Oh, there we go. They read my lips. So
did you like that little sound effect though?
I did, yeah.
Did it sound really...
No, it did sound like the table. They're at the table now. Excuse me. They're at the door now. So let's take a short break where we can get them in and get all the mics set up, and we'll welcome our guests. So stay tuned. We are back. Hello, hello, hello. And thanks for taking your time out of your busy schedules to be with us today. Can you tell our guests a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, what rank you are, and what departments you're in, please?
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Damien Ash. I'm a detective superintendent here on the Southwest, and I'm head of what we call the local investigation strand, which is our strand that covers our main office, which investigates our serious and complex crime, our proactive wing, which goes through all our sort of proactive operations, and our violence suppression team, among some other bits as well. So a fair bit here.
Thank you.
My name is Tressa Ray Donoghue. I am an acting detective inspector, and I run the proactive side of the Southwest Investigations with four teams, including drugs focus desk and a forensic conversion team.
So let's get this straight, because I always get confused.
Mm-hmm.
So there's five strands or four strands on this BCU?
Five strands.
So we're HQ.
So HQ, which runs the BCU and the four boroughs.
It's a mechanism.
Our mechanism,
going, yep.
Absolutely. We have what we call our emergency response policing teams, mm-hmm. or ERPT for short, which is what you get when you dial 999 and a cop flies out to you and gives you a great service, hopefully. We have our neighbourhood teams, which we see our dedicated ward officers that are patrolling in and around the communities. and we have the local investigations, which we spoke about. And then finally, we have what we call our public protection teams, and they cover domestic abuse, hate crime, serious sexual assault, child abuse, amongst a few many other things as well in there, missing persons and stuff. So huge areas that we cover across those five strands.
So in old money, would that have been CID?
Yeah, in old money, local investigations is what we refer to as CID.
Yeah, okay. And how many people make up this strand?
So on the local investigation strand, we're just about 180 officers of varying ranks. And that's made up around 50% of those are what we call detectives, so accredited detectives nationally. And the other half are constables that are in specialist roles within our strand.
So you're top of the pile.
Well, top dog.
I don't know if that's correct.
So the rank structure, you're superintendent?
Yep. Underneath that, there'd be two detective chief inspectors. Under that, we have five detective inspectors. Underneath that, we've got 14 detective sergeants. And then underneath that, we have about 176 constables.
Is that unusual to have that amount of people on a strand?
Of the five strands, we're probably the smallest in terms of numbers, but that doesn't necessarily reflect, I don't think, you know, that. I think that's pretty... I mean, we police a big area. There's across the BCU, we have 1,560-odd, nearly 1,600 police officers servicing the southwest. If we look at that, that's pretty akin to a small county force.
So you're responsible for Richmond? No, what is it?
Richmond, Wandsworth, Kingston and Merton.
Merton.
Yes, so we cover the four boroughs. But then our work... Although that covers our work, stretches far and wide. You know, the trash doesn't normally look like this. You can't see. It's a good job it's radio.
Thanks for radio.
She's been working 40 hours straight on an operation.
14?
40, 4-0.
Wow, okay.
Straight on an operation with colleagues in Surrey around, you know, drug lines that are being exported from various bits of London out to Surrey and back and forth, and that culminated in a job this morning for her. So, but she's here with us.
So you finished work at what time?
Half five this morning.
Half five. Commute back home?
About an hour.
Any sleep?
I've had about 2 hours actually. I thought I was looking quite good.
Well, we thought you looked good too, so it's fine.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, well, before we crack on with the actual proper interview, we're going to do a quiz. So you can see on our leaderboard here.
Okay.
We already have the top spot, which was Liz and Amanda, who had 10, I think it was, in 60 seconds. So we're going to quiz you.
Okay, so we've got to do this.
Okay, so Dan's going to put 60 seconds on the clock, please. I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to take your first answers.
Okay.
Anyone can answer.
Okay.
You can jump in.
I feel really competitive.
So do I.
Are you ready?
Go.
Okay. What does LFB mean?
London Fire Brigade.
Good. What does TOA stand for?
Time of arrival.
Good. Name a handcuffing technique, not rear stack.
Back to back.
Good. What does ETA stand for?
Estimated time on arrival.
Good. Give me one thing you can search for in soap.
Offensive weapon.
Good. Mm-hmm. What does MIT stand for?
Murder Investigation Team.
What does the BCU stand for?
Basic Command Unit.
Good. What is a blue light champion?
With well-being and mental health. Really great job.
Police officers or?
It could be anyone, but police officers...
Okay, good. How many minutes in 24 hours?
Oh, come on.
That's a tough one. Quick trash.
60 minutes in an hour, so 60 times 24.
Off the top of my head,
86,400?
No. Oh! How did you get that?
Time is up. Okay. The answer was 1,440 minutes.
Oh, I've done seconds. Do I get a point for seconds? Got even further.
Okay, so you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Damo!
Where does that put us?
8. That puts you in seconds.
A second. Of
2 people.
Of 2 people.
Of 2 people, yeah.
There so will be more.
First, last.
So
I will say, if the questions came quicker, I think we would have answered them.
Yeah, I felt
faster.
That you slowed down a little bit there.
I think so.
Yeah, okay, good. Blame the host.
You could redeem yourself for a really difficult question. Do you want to take a risk?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Yep.
What's this for, though, Dan? Is this for, like, 4 points or something? Is it to take them to 12 or... what are you doing? Because they've got 8.
No, maybe...
push them to the top.
Yeah.
Well, what's Liz going to say?
She doesn't listen to this.
What does MARV stand for?
Multi-agency risk vulnerability exploitation.
But there you go. I can rest easy tonight. Well done.
There is
a high five just given to each other.
We've both chosen.
What does it mean?
What have you just done to the leaderboard?
It means they're at the top. They deserve to be at the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
They're at the top.
Why not?
Well, why not?
They're our favourites.
There is always a spot for you in local investigations.
Yeah, always. Just,
been there, done there. No thanks.
He's only got the T-shirt. Worked the late nights. Okay, so you've already introduced yourselves and given a little bit of information about the fact that you work for investigations. Mm-hmm. We're in the press a lot for people saying that we are harassing them from stopping and searching people. Can you tell us a little bit about the proactive work that this BCU does in order to stop some of the violence that happens?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, obviously, look, we work in a bit of an industry of misery, don't we? It's, that we rarely give good news, which is a shame, but that's what we've got to do. So one of the areas we do is we do high visibility policing through our violence suppression units. So that's what you see, the uniforms and stopping and searching, which is like a controversial but useful tactic when used correctly. But we also do a number of proactive operations. Now, that's very name, isn't it? Proactive is like covert jobs. So a lot of people don't see them because obviously if they see them, it kind of be pointless when it wouldn't be covert anymore. And they're the ones really that goes on. There's a lot goes on in the background that targets the different drivers of violence, which is what our strand and the whole BCU is looking to do, to drive down that violence across London. We want to make it the safest, major global city. And I think it probably is one of the safest. And certainly on the southwest, you're probably safer here than you are in other parts of the country and London, which is great news. But we want to continue driving that. So Tress, I'll bring you in. In terms of the last, just say, 12 months, and I know you can't go into detail of some of the jobs because live.
Of course,
But, how many jobs do you think, proactive jobs that we have done in the last 12 months targeting gangs, guns, drugs, mm-hmm. knife crime?
We have done between, I would say, 25 to 30 proactive jobs, but they are different in length and times of how long those jobs take. For one of our major jobs was nearly a year. So I've got, 8 to 10 officers deployed on that job for a whole year trying to target specific subjects involved, again, with violence, with gangs, with firearms. So they are long-term jobs, but they're worth it because that person that we're after, that we're targeting, the impact they have on the community, they're worth putting that effort into to get them off the street because of their influence within their community. So that's why we work so long on those jobs. But then we do smaller jobs as well.
So how do these jobs land on your desk? Where do they come from?
Information from the public predominantly. So we get information that, there's drug dealing going on in a certain area, and that one person phones in, and then we get another bit of information. So it starts building a picture. So then we start to look at it, see who's in and around that area. And actually, there's an issue here and there's drug dealing. And it's not just about that drug dealing, it's the impact on that drug dealing. Because then we see possibly others from other drug dealers trying to take over that patch and what, that causes violence between them, and then the impact on the runners on the street from the children that are supplying the drugs. So it's a massive picture, and that's why it takes so much time, because we have to develop it. And we have, phone work going on that we're looking into with the subjects. We have, vehicles that we're looking at. So it all takes time. So initially, we're just trying to build up the intelligence picture and what that looks like. And then from that point onwards, we have to build a case. And that does take time.
Yeah, I just put into perspective that job you're talking about, which is really, you've done a fantastic job on it, absolutely fantastic.
And the team were unbelievable.
Absolutely, yeah, from everyone. There's a lot in there. Just to put in perspective, there was 250,000 lines of data that the team have processed around an individual who's effectively running a semi-organised crime group, or if you're in line of duty, OCN, OCG. but yeah, it's effectively what they're doing, and that's running drugs out and about. But with that drugs, we know that drugs that are intrinsically linked to exploitation.
Yeah.
You hear about county lines, child criminal exploitation. They're linked to guns. You know, 50% of all firearms recovered in London are recovered with Class A drugs. So they're all intrinsically linked in that. And like you say, there's a moving picture of associated violence that goes with that drug supply as well. So, you know, that is a really, really good job. And we've just finished trial. Can't go into too many details because we're still
waiting. Second part's coming up. Yeah.
But the main individual.
The main subject, yeah.
Yeah, was found guilty after what, a 12, 14 week trial?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
so when somebody, when somebody thinks it's just a minor bit of drug dealing on the local street, there's such a bigger picture behind that. It's just not one person they're dealing. There's all this information that can be useful that can go elsewhere behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we get all that information sort of from everywhere. But the bottom line is this, is that, you know, we've got 1,560 police officers roaming around the four boroughs looking, you know, and helping people. But actually, if we look at the population across those four boroughs, we're into the millions of eyes and ears that can help us. So it's really vital. People see information. And I know it can be frustrating because, you know, people can ring up and it doesn't seem like too much is done. And sometimes, you know, be really frank, not a lot is done. That's the reality of modern day policing in a difficult environment and a challenging environment with so many different things going on. But also a lot of that information gets in and can form part of those wider long-term, when I talk about those proactive and covert jobs that people don't necessarily see as much.
So typically, who would be involved in these sort of crimes? Is it an age range are we talking about? Is it a geographical region?
Well, it varies really. So if we look at our violence picture across the four boroughs, and I'm being a little bit generic here because there are four different boroughs and there's different demographics and people in that, but our violence picture is varied. So we've got violence that's associated with robbery or street robbery or muggings in you know, all terms what people say. And that demographic usually with us involves a lot of school children. That's a wider social issue when you look at, you know, you can't see me, but you'll see how old I am if you ever did. When I was at school, you know, it was you know, football scarves and you know, there wasn't any iPhones.
Tuck shop money.
Absolutely, But now, you know, if you have 50p stolen from your tuck shop or your Brentford, I'd be pretty upset if my Brentford scarf got stolen. But, you know, your Brentford football scarf, go. You know, that's not the same, is it? Let's be real, as a £1,200 iPhone 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And whilst the morality of it stays the same, the value is changing. So it does, it is more difficult for us. And so that makes it very, very difficult in that. But that does lead to some of our demography being around, it's not exclusively, but we see a lot of our youths that are victims of robbery and also involved in committing those robbery offences. So I mean, we work hard with a lot of our sort of partner agencies to try and divert away from crime. Mm-hmm. We've got strong youth integrated offender management teams that work on that. But then we go over to sort of our drug picture, which is our drug dealing. And then there's two different bits of drug dealing. There's sort of that street dealing that you talk about, which is associated with that violence. And then there's that sort of recreational drug use that kind of sits where people think that it doesn't cause any harm.
So it's just the people that like going out for a weekend.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday night. Well,
that think they're not causing any harm, and that's when you're going to highlight the bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look at, you know, cocaine use in the UK, it's got the largest cocaine use in Europe. Okay, so outside South America and the United States, which have got quite large, the UK is the largest. And if we look within the UK, London uses nearly about a third to double the amount of cocaine use that other major European cities have. So huge issue with cocaine use. Now, it's really important to, I think, for people to break down, to understand the difference. There's cocaine and then there's crack. And people think of crack, which basically is cocaine in its powdered form, heated up, mixed with, I won't tell you all the ingredients in case there's any sort of Breaking Bad people listening, but it's not actually a secret, but they break that down and it forms into a solid form, which is often referred to on the street as rocks, because what it looks like, and referred to as crack, which is the noise it makes when it's being cooked and popping. And then there's cocaine use, which is crack use is that sort of street use that we see a lot of acquisitive criminals use, where they're addicted and they need to buy it. And so then to fund it, they've got to go out and break into people's cars and steal from shops and that sort of thing to fund it. And then there's that sort of what we call or referred to often as recreational cocaine use, which is the, you know, and it's powdered for snorted, you know, and rather than smoked like crack cocaine. But I think people think, oh, you know, the crack is that awful drug that drives all that problem. But cocaine use, oh, if I, you know, at the weekend, and there is a large, you know, middle class cocaine use mm-hmm. within London.
And they're exactly the same. When we go into the houses and we do the warrants, you know, they're exactly the same dealers doing both. Yeah, so that they have a selection.
Yeah, the cocaine is made, you know, the crack cocaine is made from powdered cocaine. Yeah. So as you go up the line, the scale, those people that are involved in that, you know, exportation and supply and marketing, and even down into the smaller levels, it's the same cocaine. So mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, wine and line Friday night, you hear of people, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. This doesn't have any...
What was that, wine?
Wine and line, I think a lot of people sort of call it.
Wine and a line of coke.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And people think that doesn't really have... I mean, look, if we move away from the morality of it, we could get really wide here. You know, the drug use of, you know, cocaine and drug trafficking, as you start going all the way back to the source. So, you know, most of cocaine comes out of South America. There are other parts of the world. But, you know, there's no such thing as organic cocaine, you know, fair trade cocaine like there is coffee. You know, these are farmers who are having their livelihood, you know, overrun by various, you know, cartels mm-hmm. And who have absolutely horrendous life. And, you know, the bloodshed in the other side of the world. And then as that arrives into, you know, into Europe and distributed across Europe and into the UK, you know, that comes with all sorts of associated costs and risks and violence that comes along with that. It's a, you know, it's a really deep and murky world. So I suppose really that just to let that simple line of cocaine that people think, oh, you know, it's not harming everyone. It's still a young lad or a young girl that has been travelling that across the country. It's on a street corner to peddle it out. It, you know, and look, we're going to beat around the bush here. We're seeing one of the largest levels of teenage homicide in London in a few years. You know, there's no way of sugarcoating that. It's serious. And we look at 30% of all murders in London are linked with drugs and drug trafficking. Wow. So you can really see that there's a bit of a cognitive disconnect sometimes from that, what is, can be glitzy and glammy, to actually the real murky, gritty world. And that's what we want to just really get to.
So you've talked about the end point, people are losing their lives on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Trish, if I could just bring you in, paint for me a picture of the crime journey someone would take from getting involved, mm-hmm. maybe as a child at school, to that end point that we're speaking about, where we're talking about where people are losing their lives.
I think you touched on it earlier, Damo, about sort of there's a social aspect of this. And so if we're looking at gangs, for example, and we look at estates, you know, it's very much a community. They see themselves as a community. Their parents might be out working. There might be a single parent family. They become involved in the group within the estate, and they become their family. There's a real trust there. So
you're saying they, are we talking girls and boys?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, predominantly I would say it's males, mm-hmm. but yeah, no, we've seen a rise actually in, I'd say female gangs coming up at the moment. But you know, there's two ways. We've got the trust in the gang, but they become, the gang themselves exploit these children. They get them to trust them. They buy them things. You know, some people can't afford new trainers from these families. It's, again, working, you know, from often hard-working families, and their parents are going out to work every day. They're coming home from school. They're bored. They're out in the estate. And they're offered all sorts. And, you know, they're vulnerable. They're children at the end of the day, 10, 11, 12. Who's going to say no to a new pair of trainers or a tenner or this or, you know, whatever they're offering? So the trust begins to form. And as you would with your family, you love your family. You try and do anything for your family. So this connection builds, this trust builds, and there's a respect. And then all of a sudden it changes. That's what we're seeing. It changes. They become, you know, they've got them hooked in. And this is when they start, whether it's exploiting them by selling drugs, exploiting them by carrying weapons, exploiting them, committing crimes. And then they become, the more, you know, the more they do for them, the higher up they become in this gang, the more trust they get. And then do they get to a stage where they own their own line, their own drugs line? Yep, but we've seen that happen. I worked here as a PC 15 years ago, and I'm seeing now, coming back, kids like 12 or 13 that now run their own drugs lines. that were just becoming to get involved in some of these gangs.
What would you say would be the allure? Is it the money? Is it the status? Is it the excitement? What is it? Is it all of them?
You've hit the nail on the head. There's money. There's a financial incentive.
But they feel as well.
There's belonging.
Love. Yeah.
There's a sense of belonging. There's also a sense of protection because there's a if you're feeling part of a belonging and to a group that and I'm using inverted commas protect you because they're not protecting you, they're exploiting you.
And that's the other thing. Sorry, I just wanted to add there is that. What gang do you go to? Because sometimes when some schools, it's like you either join one gang or you join it. You can't not join a gang because then you've got no protection. So I think
people would be shocked to hear that.
Yeah.
That there is that sort of binary choice. Well, yeah. There is no choice. You've got to go one way or the other. Why is that so?
I mean, I think on the Southwest, I just want to say the Southwest, I don't feel it's as strong as perhaps other areas in London. But because there's so many gangs in such a small area, Some of the things that we're seeing are that they need that protection. So if they're out on the street, they won't be touched because they're from blah blah gang, and the only people that are going to be after them are their opposing gang. They're safe in that area, so they can go out and stay in that area and feel safe because they joined that gang, and they don't go out of that territory. They know if they go out of that territory, they're at risk.
So in the press, this is referred to as the postcode wars?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, safe is a relative term, isn't it? They're not safe because when any form of drug activity or if you're involved in, gang affiliation or membership, it's inherently dangerous. When, we're looking at kids that are, recruited or exploited is the right word, from 13, 14, 15, you're getting, easy money, what is seen as easy money, but it's not easy money, is it? That's the associated risks that come with it. Status, fear as well. It's very difficult, to turn around and say. And a lot of time they have to work off debt as well. Mm-hmm. We see that. If you look at it as a model, it's not too dissimilar, in fact, as other modern day slavery and exploitation of entrapping, debting,
grooming,
debting, and then paying off that debt, which you see with modern day exploitation when we've seen with migrants being trafficked into the UK and then have to work off, whether it's in the sex trade, whether it's cockle and whelp picking on the coast. They've got to work off that debt. It's similar. It's a modern day slavery.
It's a vicious circle as well. Yeah. It's so hard for them to get out of. And then, that's what we're sort of working on at the moment is around, they don't want to come. They don't want to talk to police. They don't want to talk to us. And it's us having to work around that. Why is that the case? What can we do about that? And building their trust levels.
Which is around that diversion work and a lot of that engagement piece that goes on that we do, really well here.
So do you think that is fear then? Do you think that the gangs tell them that they can't go to the police because this is going to happen to you?
Absolutely.
And so from early on when they first come to them, that's the fear because obviously...
It's the fear. It's also, initially I'd say it's because they don't, it's like, again, I spoke about the family. You're not going to tell the police if your family commits a crime there's the protection mode. And then definitely it's fear. The gangs have hurt children and people that have owed them the debt, and they know that. And they live, they live on that.
Which is why it's so important that we get our engagement right at so many levels. So when we're interacting, because, you allude earlier to stop and search. It's really, really obviously a controversial tactic. But, at those interactions, when those officers, our officers are interacting and stopping and searching, we've got to get that right.
Because
if that's right, that's that part that builds that trust, and that understanding. If we get that wrong at that very beginning bit, then why would someone come to us for help? Mm. Because if we can't get it right then, why would we get it right later? So that's really important, really, really important to do.
Yeah, how we stop and search and how we interact, I think, is vital, definitely.
Yeah, but what I'd be interested to hear, I think you... do hear from people that say, well, step away, do something else, do something productive, join the scouts. I'm guessing it's not that easy.
Oh, of course it's not. It's
what are the consequences?
For them, they're earning good money. If they're successful in what they're doing in running for the gangs or involved in the gangs, or they are earning good money, but they get used to a lifestyle.
What are we talking about in terms of good money?
Well, a few hundred a day.
Wow. And, that's for 11 or 12 year old earning?
I would say that's a little bit older. You're 11 and 12 year old, you're looking at a bit more of the trainers, the 20 quid here and there.
Okay, so they more buy stuff for them and then they pay that debt off.
Yes.
By working for them. Yep.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but as they get older, so it's a lifestyle as well. You've got to remember, they don't have to get up at 8 o'clock or 6:30 in the morning to be at work at 8 o'clock. That this suits their lifestyle. It's what they know. There's a prestige, a power. You know, if we look at some of the music that's coming out at the moment, and there's some drill music coming out. There's a whole lifestyle associated with that, and that's hard to walk away from, you know. I kind of get that.
But there are, you know, a number of great organisations across London, but, you know, here, you know, Wandsworth, we've got Jim Carney's, which
is brilliant.
A shout out here to them, you know. Look them up on Google, the work they do is fantastic.
What was it?
It's called Jim Carney's. It's Carney's
in Battersea.
Okay, is it a voluntary group or...?
It's a charity.
A diversion charity, is it?
Yeah, they just work. They work with the youths within the Battersea area, and offer them support and one to one. What's the word I'm using?
Mentoring.
Yeah. I don't think it's called Jim Carney's.
It's just called Carney's.
Just called Carney's. Ignore the gym bit.
Yeah.
I think that's a pub somewhere.
Yeah. I was thinking it's gym.
And so, do you think that when it comes to fear, do you think there is a point where the youths get a reality check, and then they're fighting between their family, because if they go to the police, they're going to muck up their whole family's lives, because it will probably involve relocating somewhere and the bigger things like that, and so they're then stuck with, actually, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but now I've gone down that path.
Absolutely. And what are you going to do if you're, you know, a young individual or an old individual, and you think someone's going out to hurt you? What are you going to do? The natural instinct is to arm yourself and carry a knife.
Yeah.
Now, look, you know, we all know, and the statistics are there, you know, as young people carry knives, they are 3 times more likely to be injured, whether it's from their own knife or someone else's.
Yeah.
So that, then we talk about, you know, the knife crime, you know, problems, where and see how that's linked in to that drug, you know, related violence, and that drug trafficking, that knife crime feeds into that. So it's all intrinsically linked, the violence picture.
And I think as well, you know, if they're so far entrenched in that lifestyle, going to prison is part of the lifestyle. Like that's not a deterrent for them.
That's what they signed up for, basically. Exactly. It's something that should happen.
Yeah, exactly. And they know that there's other members of, for example, if they're a gang member, there's other members of the gangs in the prison that they'll be looked after anyway. So,
so it's not there's no worry or scare or fear to go into prison. It's actually probably quite a good thing.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
it will bump
they
them
don't
up.
Want to lose their freedom, obviously, but it's not the end. Like if I went to prison, it would be, you know, I'd be absolutely devastated.
End of the world.
The average person would be, it's the worst nightmare.
Yeah,
but it's for them. It's part of course.
So the key for us is really dismantling is that diversion piece that we talked about there, getting them out, you know, seeing what's right and wrong,
opportunities.
But for us is then it's dismantling those gangs and dismantling by taking, you know, identifying who's orchestrating it, who's operating it, like we spoke about on a couple of the jobs. And that's what we do. You know, the more of those key players that we can remove, the weaker that gang becomes or gets dismantled completely. So, you know, we've dismantled over the last 12 months, I think probably, four or five recognised gangs.
Wow. Probably more. I would say 7 or 8, actually.
Removing those. So that's why some of these long-term operations are really important.
Mm.
And we're working, you know, behind the scenes to dismantle those in order then to protect those children that could go into those gangs, which then subsequently will stop the, you know, the knife crime and the violence.
But the children, I think, you know, it's very easy. And I think to members of the public, it's like, well, he's drug dealing outside my address, but he's a 13 or 14. Yes, we can go. But from running a proactive unit, it's about hitting the people in the middle. Like, we've got to take them out in order to, as Damo said, to dismantle. There's no there's no benefit for me. This is an exploited child going after an exploited child to put them into the criminal justice system. That doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. That's about, right, let's work with our partners, let's work with social, let's work together to try and help this child at 12 or 13 to divert them.
Absolutely. And then let's bang up the person that's responsible.
Yeah, because there is an adult behind the child's actions, not a young person.
Always is.
So what would you say, because the listeners to our podcast are more likely going to be older and are going to be the parents or family members of this, what advice would you give for a parent who might be worried about this might be happening to their child, or maybe even prevent them from happening, or
are there signs you can look at? I suppose the obvious signs, which is, you know, suddenly items or wealth that, you know, new trainers that you haven't bought as a parent, how does a 13-year-old go out and buy those? You know, those sort of signs. So frequent periods of going missing, or if you see sort of, you know, if we're talking about county lines exploitation, county lines tends to is a phrase you'll hear quite often, where drug lines are taken from London out to various different parts of the country, usually out to the coast or up north or out to, you know, everywhere. But and Operation Hirachi, which is a London-based operation, shut down literally, I think, over nearly 200 lines in the last year and a half. So it's fantastic. Look for, you know, has there been abnormal travel? You know, is your child moving and travelling outside of London? That seems a bit odd, that kind of thing. And look, parents know, don't they? That sort of behaviour, that kind of thing.
And would parents, because I guess the fear would then be that they are dobbing their child who's committing the crimes.
Yeah, I think...
What do you do with the information? Firstly, who do they contact?
Yeah.
And are they likely to be prosecuted because they have been committing crime? Or do we say, actually, we were going for the bigger fish?
Look, there's loads of ways to get hold of us. I suppose the easiest and most anonymous way is Crime Stoppers.
Yep.
0800 555 111. Yeah, got it right. So that's the easiest way. That's anonymous. Any information, whether that's about you're worried about your child, or you're worried about you see something, or you've got information, or you know of somebody and you just want to stay anonymous, that all comes through. So that's a great easy one. Two, you can ring 101. So just ring up the police and us, and you'll get put through, and one of our officers will come round and you know, speak to you about it and have a look at that and get that information. If you see crime in action, you know, that's, you know, if you're seeing some drug deals happening now, dial 999. We do our very best to get there within, you know, 10, 11, 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. So as quick as possible. We get there quicker most times. And we can, you know, deal with it then and there. Look, every case is done on its merits, but absolutely the position is this. If you are a exploited child, you know, there is legal things that are in place. So the National Referral Mechanism, which is a legal binding thing that prevents or helps in terms of sustaining those that have been exploited. And our position here, you know, we have a child criminal exploitation team that go through, and they manage a number of different children and look at those. And absolutely, we will then look at the investigation of exploitation, and if that is involved of the person who's exploiting that child, and if they're involved in that wider criminality, that person around, you know, supply of drugs or anything like that, we absolutely will prosecute them or do our very best.
I think as well, if you know, parents calling to say, I'm really worried about my child, they're being exploited, I think they're involved in drug dealing, they're not our suspects, they're our victims. Yeah. And that's really important to get across. I'm actually trying at the moment to develop a programme for parents. I'm trying to do a pilot Liz Chappell is really behind it as well, to try and educate parents around signs of exploitation. And I'm looking at sort of several different sources at the moment. But one of the major things I think with parents as well is, you know, your child's phone, you're paying for your child's phone.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a lot of parents are like, well, I don't want to touch their phone, it's their privacy. It's at the end of the day, you know, if you're concerned, that's your phone. You've got every right to go into that phone. And I'd be looking at, you know, drill videos. Parents think, oh, they're just listening to rap music, you know, as you would. There's a lot of content within drill music, which, again, is going to try and become part of my programme about education around words, wording, what they're actually saying and what they actually mean.
So I've got a good idea what drill music is. Paint a picture for me.
Type it into Google. Are
there certain artists that are associated with only drum music?
Yeah, there are. And there's some really good, don't get me wrong, some real really good drill artists out there, but a lot of gangs use it to communicate to violence, sexual innuendo, sexual exploitation. They're using these videos, and also to pick fights with other gang members. So if you know, it's a deeper meaning. It's a
communication tool.
So communications, yeah, absolutely. They sort of dig each other out on them.
That's what the drill means. Yeah. It's a sort of street term for, you know, sort of attacking another.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of subgenre. I think you probably look at, heard of grime, which is a you know, subclassification of music, and it sort of comes out of that. But let's be really clear here. You know, music doesn't drive people to be involved in violence. No.
Uh-huh. I'm sort of saying that for parents to be aware of what their children are listening to.
We have seen what we do see in some of that, you know, the violence, that serious youth violence that we've seen, and the drug related violence. We do see that some of that is wrapped around with some of that drill music, and used between the gangs.
I've seen actual, you know, we've had individuals stabbed from different gangs because of drill videos.
Because I there's been something in the press as well where other gangs will go to an area where they shouldn't be to make their music video, and that in itself is being disrespectful. Yeah. And they might not even be being attacking that gang, but the fact they're there is sending that clear message of, look what I've just done, and then that starts the war.
It's provocation, is it? Or a show of strength.
I'm not a parent, but if I was listening to this, I'd be terrified, but I'd also be sort of relieved that there are people like you and your teams that dedicate themselves to sort of dismantling, picking their pieces through this and preventing it from sort of being a total scourge. You know, we know it's out there, but, you know, we don't want it to... We like to think that it's somehow distant from us when it's not, is it? It's around the corner.
Because I think in the press as well, I think a couple of years ago you had the young 14-year-old boy that got killed on the scooter, and I know a lot of people looked and thought, he's 14, he shouldn't be a drug dealer, he's on a scooter, but there is an adult behind making him do that. He didn't just get up at 13 and go, oh, actually I'm gonna go down the road and buy some drugs and deal it to people, because the people that are actually dealing the drugs aren't actually the drug dealers. There's a drug dealer behind it. They're just running it for somebody else, aren't they?
They're working for them.
Well, that's one of the myths though, isn't it, that it's somehow some organization that's sort of chaotic. It's not.
It's
highly formulated.
It's a business model, and as you go up that sort of tree, that supply chain, that business model actually moves into real business effectively.
There's legalized legit businesses associated with it as well.
Wow,
we haven't got time to get on to money laundering and some of the stuff around that, but yeah, so that's you know, really is linked in, all of that, you know, that drug use, the violence, but we, you know, we're
working. I think as well, what I do want to say is, like, having worked in the Southwest, and it is a really safe safe area, like Wandsworth, Kingston, Mercer and Richmond. I know them all really well. I've worked in them all. Yes, like anywhere in London and everywhere now, unfortunately, we have got child exploitation, and it is a real issue, and we need to be looking at ways to prevent, disrupt, divert, and we will continue to do that. But I don't want it to be a scare thing. It's not about that. It's just, I think as well, we just really want people to keep their eyes peeled. Like, we need as much information as possible, and that's for me is a major thing. People do not realise, by phoning Crime Stoppers, by phoning, reporting, it does come to us. You might not know what happens with it, but it does, and we appreciate every single call we get.
Because you're not necessarily going to be able to call that person back and go, oh, thanks for the information, it informed this. Only if it's a crucial bit of information that we need for evidence-wise, but it can build the bigger picture. Mm. So, you know, you can call in with this information.
Yeah.
What would you say to those people that say, you've lost it, you know, you've lost control of this, this is too big a problem, what are you going
to
do?
Well, I'd say to those people, come and see us work. Come and have an interaction with my teams. Come and actually see the Southwest and have a feel of it. We can see that
you're totally transparent about the work you do.
Obviously, it's a bit sneaky. We can't give. That'd be silly, but absolutely, yeah. I'd say actually, we've seen the lowest levels of knife crime over the last 2 years on the Southwest. We've seen the lowest level of robbery over on the Southwest.
You know, and these are the seeds of hope, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
It can appear to be quite. hopeless sort of dark.
Absolutely. This is what I'm talking about when we talk about, you know, policing being a bit of an industry of misery. But there are some great, as we can see, the great work that goes on. All of that, you know, these reductions in those violence pieces, that whilst, you know, they're all part of all that work, you know, day in, day out, layering up and just keep going and going, and that's what ends up driving down.
And also that. If you come into my unit, come into my gangs teams, come into my proactive crime teams, or I was like, if you think we've lost it, you should see how hard these guys work. I know I'm biased, but I definitely think I've got the best teams on.
How many hours sleep did you have tonight?
A couple of hours.
But that's
my team, you know, they're all doing that behind the scenes. They push and push and push, and they work so hard and they're so passionate, and it means so much to them. And to get that result, you know, even this morning, you know, we arrested somebody for concerned in supply of Class A, and you know, that it's a major result. And he's a big player, etc. Every single person at 5 a.m. this morning were buzzing. So after already doing nearly 24 hours on and then carrying on, all the paperwork after the arrest as well, you know. So you're looking at 36, 40 hours easy.
And you can't quantify, but think of all the misery you're saving someone down the line.
You know, Damien and I, I've turned up on scene at murders. I've had a few child murders, and had to deal with them, and seeing that family and seeing that child. And if you can, it doesn't go away. It's always in your head. And that's the reason we do what we do. That's the reason I know that we're really passionate about it. I do not want to see another child or another family go through that. Yeah. It's horrendous.
It sticks with
you. Reality,
you know,
yeah.
Having that conversation as a parent myself, having that conversation with a parent and having to deliver that news, it's heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. I think people think that's why. Yeah. So this is, you know, that is our reason for getting out of the bed in the morning, is to absolutely try and drive down violence. On the
Well, you've mentioned about coming along. People at the moment can't come along
because the
ride along scheme has stopped for a short while. But do keep looking if you are interested in coming for a ride along, and by that we mean out in the response cars with the response officers, but also we can come along and they can be with you in the offices and
absolutely.
See this side of it, which is good. So
good. What we've done before on a number of our sort of warrants, you know, when we say warrants, you might raid, you know, see on the telly, smashing doors down, sometimes knocking on others. But you know,
people could be involved in coming to watch that.
We've absolutely had, you know, a number of key community people, individuals coming out. We've had teachers. We've had, you know, people come and see firsthand.
Reporters. So we had. So I'm running the violence suppression unit at the moment, and we had an 18-year-old gentleman come out with us, who's just in between, finished school, between university, wanted to come on a ride along. Found it, you know, was fascinated by it all. And also saw stop and search. I think that's the other thing, seeing stop and search in action, why, you know, that person stopped and searched and what's behind that.
So keep looking out on the website. If it's not available now, please just keep looking on the Met website for ride alongs, and then you can apply when when it's open again. So
even better, come join us.
Exactly.
Always recruiting police constables across
absolutely.
London.
Absolutely.
One of the best jobs.
And detectives as well.
Absolutely. You can do direct entry detective route now. So if you can go directly in as detective.
Yep.
Is that graduates only or...?
There's, I think, three different pathways in. You probably put me on the spot exactly. I think there is a graduate entry scheme. I think there's another one that's similar, but with
an apprenticeship
scheme.
And then there's also where we will get you your degree.
Absolutely.
So there's if you've got a degree, if you want to get a degree with us, or the apprenticeship scheme.
Absolutely. Yeah, go online. But absolutely, yeah. Although we talk about, it's a bit depressing, some of the stuff, absolutely a great job. It's challenging. Policing the capital is really challenging. Mm. You know, crime, the speed of which crime changes. We've seen that digital movement so quickly. We see the influx of, you know, the change of drug pictures. We won't go on to that now. But when you start looking at some of the methamphetamines and ice and you know, that coming in quickly and how we respond to that. And then, look, there's only a certain number of police officers, you know, around, and we've got Extinction Rebellion coming up. You know, that's a huge demand for all of the 12 BCUs across London. We've got to demand that, you know, allow people to do their free protest.
And that's it as well. We're supplying officers up, you know, to you know, go up to central London. So that means we lose a bit of resources back on the BCU.
But it doesn't stop. Policing doesn't stop elsewhere because these happen. It still happens. It just happens on a smaller scale.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. You just got to think about how we, you know, manage those resources and that demand.
So how do you look after your teams? How do you make sure they turn up for work the next day?
Well, we have done a series of barbecues. And you're laughing because these two are involved in it.
Smell the onions all.
Exactly. It took me days to get rid of the smell of barbecue off
and,
my
and
hands.
And I actually flipped a load of burgers
you
myself.
You did, you were very well.
I think I was probably
Hero.
The best.
Yes, chef.
Hero.
I think so.
Well, it's a difficult situation because... Well, you know, we're a public outfit. We can't give people a rise. We can't give people luncheon vouchers. Do they still do luncheon vouchers?
I don't know.
Shame your age.
But, you know, we can appreciate them and have those, even those small little things that we do, which, okay, may sound like a barbecue. What's that going to achieve? But we did it and people enjoyed it. Mm. And it just takes that edge off that day, doesn't it, really?
Yeah,
you're absolutely
someone's
right.
Made an effort for us.
You know, we're not Google, we're not Aston Martin. I can't, you know, I'd love to be able to, you know, do those sort of things, you know, away days
corporate dinners
that you see. We can't, and absolutely we can't because this is public money. And if we're spending public money, where should that money go? It should go in about making people safe and reducing violence. And so it is difficult. How do we thank people that have done a 50-hour shift?
Oh my God, I'm going up by the minute.
I make her come in and do a podcast with us. But it is really difficult. And so that's about what you say, you know, it's actually recognising some of that work. What is good, you know, for us is when we do get, you know, members of the public writing or, you know, to work. Because a lot of people, it's easy to centre on those who shout the loudest and as our biggest critics. And it's all right to criticise. That's good. We should be criticised because we don't get it right all the time. So, but it is good when we hear good news stories and people thank us. And that really goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, I think definitely whenever you get the letters coming in, we have an internal newsletter that we give and we share those. And it means a lot when an officer, I know when I used to get them, thank you for helping my husband when he was having a mental health crisis or whatever else. It means actually so much. And it's so nice that they've actually taken the time out to write a thank you letter. And it does mean something. And
because it is our job, but actually, you know, we're still human.
Of course.
And actually dealing with, you know, a gentleman who's having a mental health crisis, it's hard. Yeah. There's so many hard bits to our job. And I'm not complaining. We've signed up to it. But to get that extra special, it really does make you feel special. And what you're doing is worthwhile. Validates what you're doing.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I'm glad I spent that extra little time with them or whatever.
Well, that gives you the whatever it's required to carry on.
Exactly.
Because you just want to do it. At some point, you've got an expiry date. You can say, listen, I've done my bit. I've had enough.
Yeah, definitely.
It's those little things.
And you do. Yeah. And like we've had... you know, for me running the proactive unit, I think everyone really enjoys, you're working with every single unit really, with the Met, you're working firearms, you're working with dogs, you're working with different counties, you're working with TSG, surveillance. So they get a real varied insight to the, you know, to policing. But, you know, if people leave us, it's normally to go and join a specialist unit. They don't tend to leave the unit because the work's really good. Mm-hmm. But also, it's about flexibility when they're able to have those times to actually, because it's all great when that operation comes in the proactive. But it's, as Damon mentioned earlier, going through thousands upon hundreds of thousands worth of text messages, phone calls to try and, you know, get this individual. It's exhausting. Exactly. And it's, you know, it gets boring actually, but it's having that mix and supporting them and giving them what they need. And that means the right equipment, the right training, the right people around them, making sure that you're recruiting the right people so the team feel really supported. Mm. And for me as well, I know you're next to me, but you know, having SLT behind you and saying, do you know what? You've got our backing.
Yep.
You do what you need to do.
And the SLT are the senior leadership team.
No one can see me pinching her to say that.
Really? So brutal. We're really lucky. And I genuinely will say that in the Southwest, I feel like real...
There's a good ethos around the BCU of supporting each other. There's a very clear mission, which is around making it safe as possibly can, and everyone is focused on that, and that's good. And that feels good when people like that.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from Liz Chappell, our BCU commander. I think, you know, she's made it very clear about what she wants to achieve, how she wants to teams to perform,
yep.
what she can do, how you can help each other to enable those results. And that wasn't always the case. You know, I've been knocking around in the police for like 17 years, and it was almost you just work day to day and hopefully join the dots.
Yeah.
But I think when someone does come along and say, listen, I'm going to set out my shop, this is what we want, this is what we want to achieve, I just think it just coordinates and allows people to do their role, you know, to do their job and do their role.
I completely agree with you. I think it's so about, you know, the police, it is, you know, it's a disciplined organisation, but we're still, there needs to be communication, engagement and encouragement. And actually, as I say, I was 15 years in, and having, you know, previous, it was very much like you didn't really know who your borough commander was. You didn't really know who your...
Well, you never ever went into CID.
You were scared. You were scared to go into CID.
Yeah, the only time you went upstairs to see the commander was if you were in trouble normally.
Yeah.
You'd done something wrong. That's
you'd
any reason.
You'd have to walk into a lovely environment.
Yeah. That's the other thing, yeah.
You know, just people, little sort of conversations going on. You're like, excuse me, can I
hand over my prisoner?
Like, exactly. But, can I give you a little bit of grief? I think you might have. Oh,
I'm so glad that those days are gone. Because
rightly so.
It's just, you know, that outstayed its welcome, didn't it? Really
did. Absolutely.
Well, look, times are changing. You know, industry changes, and we've changed. Absolutely for good. Yeah, because our whole, you know, look, we can't do any of this on our own. We can't even do it across five strands on our own. We need the public. You need, you know, all of the strands.
You need everyone.
Absolutely working together on that. Mm. Actually what we're trying to do is actually make policing professionals. What we want is, you know, is an absolute service of policing professionals. And, you know, we need, look, we'll be really clear, there's a load of stuff that we need, more diversity on our front line. We can look at how we're more flexible to allow, you know, part-time and, you know, working parents, you know, in the roles. And we've been pioneering loads of stuff, not just here on the Southwest, but across London on that. So, you know, just try and make the Met one of the most attractive places to work. Because we can't do, like we said, that stuff earlier that Google and Apple can do.
Last year we had the first part-time recruits, which is the first time ever. Because normally you would have to do your probation for two years and then start working part-time, whereas now you could actually join as a part-time worker, which opened it up for, I think, 12 mothers. So
well, we've done it in the proactive unit, you know, just in the Southwest, because proactive gangs notoriously, you know, those squad type things notoriously was very much a male-dominated because the hours and, you know, mums, dads couldn't necessarily commit to the hours that these, which we saw for our operation last night. But actually, it's about the flexibility of it. Mm-hmm. And we've had a real increase in recruitment of females within the both teams.
Yeah.
Because we're flexible with it. If you need to leave at a certain time on that day, that's fine. We make sure we get someone else. It's just about communication, flexibility, and people work then. You know, you were saying, how do you look after your staff? Simple things like that.
Of
and
course,
actually,
makes a big
getting
difference.
The right officers, because we were missing out on female officers joining our unit with the experience and knowledge that they have because they've got a child. That makes
of course,
no sense.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, we now have got experience and it's only benefited the team, ultimately.
I think it must be something in the water here at SW, because before this, I was at Scotland Yard, before that, Westminster for many years. It's a different feeling here. I don't know what it is. We've only been here, say, only about a year, is it?
Less than a year for me.
Less than a year?
Less,
but there's something different here from, I don't know where it's from the top down, and it sort of filtered through, but there was a real sort of, there's an optimism, which is, a scarce resource in policing.
Yeah.
There's a can do, you know, let's try best. Mm. If we fall on our face, we'll just dust ourselves, we'll get back up, we'll try it at least.
Yeah.
And I don't think, well, from my experience, that is something that's commonplace yet within the Met.
Yeah.
So I see this as a sort of a pioneering borough. You know, you talk about the schemes that you want to put into place. And I think once someone does it, it almost gives people permission to do other things in their department or in their unit, and it sort of it gives you that sense of I'll try it.
And that's definitely, I completely agree with you, and I think again, I sort of God, I sound like I'm sucking up now. But again, that is the SLT, senior leadership team, giving that support. Mate, it's about, do you know what it is, I think?
I'm
it's
still
about
pinching being,
it's about being innovative and actually trying things and not being scared to try things. Because before, when I was a PC, I always thought, well, no, you have to do it that way because mm-hmm. that's how you're taught at training school and yep. that's how it's got to be. Yeah. And no, I can't approach that because I haven't got... I felt as really restrictive. Where now I'm like, you know, I work a lot with our partners, especially around the gangs, and I'm like, could we try this? Could we try this scheme? Could we work
exactly? And if it doesn't work, then exactly. you've lost nothing. Exactly. But if, even yeah. if you just do it and you save one young person's life or one yeah. young person's future, mm-hmm. then it's been beneficial, yeah. hasn't
you
it?
You only do what you've done, you only get what you got.
Very true.
Hang on, say that again. I'll get confused with those. Yeah, sort
of things. If you only do what you've done, you only get what you've got.
Yeah, mm. Should be a t-shirt.
I'll work that out later.
Well, thank you. I'm hoping that the listeners have found it useful and that it is hit home a few home truths mm. that might not they things they might have not necessarily seen before mm-hmm. and to get in contact with us in the future.
Definitely. More important than that, we're top of the table now.
We are. Oh, that's about our early
you
win.
See how easily that can be changed.
Yeah, all I'm saying is anybody else that comes on.
We make our own
I don't want to make it as easy for them. Okay.
Okay, yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, toughen those questions, quick.
Well, thank you very much. We know it's been tough. You've had a long shift with only a very short break. And
you know,
I'm sure you probably.
You rest the day off. Yes.
You're breaking up. Oh, I couldn't hear that. I couldn't hear that.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
No, thanks for having us. It's been really, really great. So thank you.
Thank you both.
I enjoyed that recording, Claire.
I did. It was very, very nice meeting those two. They're very passionate, aren't they, about the department they're working in?
Completely. And it's a shame that this is just audio because it's the animation that you get, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of fire in their eyes.
Yeah, and the chemistry between the two of them. They clearly like working together and get some really good results. So it was really nice to meet them, yeah.
It's really sort of reassuring as well because even within the police, you know, we sometimes forget about the units that are sort of almost working in the shadows because of the nature of their role and what they do and the sensitivities around that. And to see that they are day by day, sort of stone by stone, step by step, doing their very best to sort of make inroads into dismantling all these networks that are just causing complete misery, you know, wherever they go. It's just, it's sort of, my shoulders are slightly more down now that I know that those people are there rather than sort of being sort of stressed out all the time.
It's nice to know what else goes on this BCU because there are so many teams like that that are working that you don't necessarily hear about. So it's actually nice to showcase them for once so people know what they do and also to hear about when you do give some information to the police, what actually happens with it. Because I might be taking that bit of information and thinking nothing's being done about mm-hmm. it when in actual fact something is being done about it and it actually is a small part of a bigger picture.
And they work hard.
Long hours.
I know that broad strokes here that, you know, people put in the hours, that's the nature of being in the police, but they take it to another level, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, Tress was saying after the interview that if a job comes in, then it's sort of quick texts to sort of people, sorry, got to cancel.
That's right, yeah. You know, especially if last minute stuff comes in. And
you've got to have really supportive sort of a network around you, friends, family, that will sort of understand those demands. It'd be so easy to just cut people like that loose because they're always sort of waiting for that call sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just really nice to hear they get on so well as a team. Very refreshing to know what goes on and to hear the excellent work that they're doing. Sometimes frustrating, but the excellent work that goes on behind the scenes. Even, very, very good.
Even with my croaky voice, which indeed. Was due to, well, shall we say, late hour karaoke singing sessions.
I'm glad you brought it up because I didn't want to bring it up before the interview because I thought I might offend you.
Well, I can hear it in my headphone now. Like, but, I sound really croaky.
But yeah, I did wonder.
But why. If you are singing Whitney Houston sort of on repeat at a very loud volume.
It's going to happen. There's
consequences.
And this is it. And you certainly paid those consequences.
I did.
We hope that you found the episode useful and that we gave you some insight as to what the police do, but also some signs to look out for your own children or some young people that might be in your family or that you might know. and that you can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously on the free phone number, or indeed get in contact with 101, give the information that way, or I think you can also do it online if you want to as well. You can also request that officers attend your address in plain clothes so it's not obvious to anybody else that you are speaking to the police, or you can come to one of the police stations that are open 24 hours if you want to come and see us in person. So we hope you found it useful. As always, please email in if you would like us to speak about anything in particular. I have got a couple of other things lined up, so hopefully they will be out in the next couple of months and will continue to be of interest to you. Is there anything else, Dan? Is everything got everything covered that's on your list that we've spoken about?
I'm conserving my voice.
You're conserving your voice. Okay, well, I've covered everything on my list. If everything is done on your list, mm-hmm. This is the podcast on the Southwest BCU by Dan and CJ.
Until next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.